Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Bert Weisbord, and I'm here to talk with Nancy Guppy about my novel, Inside Passage, and her TV program, Art Zone with Nancy Guppy, and more generally, about Seattle and the Pacific Northwest. Nancy spent 8 years as a writer, producer, cast member on Almost Live, King TV's late-night sketch comedy show. She's currently the host and senior producer of Art Zone with Nancy Guppy, a weekly half-hour TV program now in its fifth season that airs on Seattle Channel 21 and KCTS 9 and streams online. Art Zone highlights and promotes the art and artists of the Northwest and received the 2011 Emmy Award for Best Entertainment Series. Before writing novels, I produced feature films, including Ghost Stories starring Fred Astaire, and Raggedy Man starring Sissy Spacek. My first novel, Inside Passage, was published in January 2013. My new novel, In Velvet, will be published on May 13th of this year. Teaser, the second book in the Corey Logan trilogy and the sequel to Inside Passage, will be published in the winter of 2014. Hello, Nancy, and thank you for being here.
Hey, Bert, it's great to be here. You look fabulous, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you. They tell me I have a radio face.
I think you've got a beautiful face.
Thank you. Let's begin by focusing on Inside Passage. Tell me about your reactions to the book.
Well, this is funny because, first of all, when you and I talked a couple weeks ago setting this whole thing up, and we decided just kind of mutually, like, yeah, I'm going to read the book. But then I had that little tiny bit of dread, like, oh, no, I have to read it, and B, what if I don't like it? So that was my little interior fear. So I picked it up, started reading it, and I got completely hooked to the point where I woke up one morning at like 3 a.m., couldn't quite get back to sleep, and I thought, you know what? What the hell? I'm going to get up. I'm going to finish it. So I got up at 3 and read for 4 hours and finished
it. Wow.
So it was really good. And I'm not usually one who loves thrillers or things that are, you know, kind of scary, maybe someone's going to get murdered kind of thing, books. Because I'm kind of get nervous about stuff like that. I don't know why. But this was, the characters were really interesting. Obviously, I know it's set in the Northwest, and I'm from the Northwest. But fundamentally, I wanted to keep turning the page because I wanted to follow the story. And that is pretty much really all you can ask as an author, I think, is just, are they interested in the narrative? And I was definitely interested in the narrative. So good job.
Thank you so much. How much of that is because there's a strong female protagonist, do you think?
You know, I personally don't think that doesn't really resonate for me. I mean, I think it's great, you know, but I don't really care about the gender of the characters, as long as they're interesting characters. Like, I never have been a fan, and I've done a lot of comedy in my life. I don't understand, you know, female comedy or male comedy or, you know, I just don't get it. It's either funny or it's not. That's how I always see it. So my sense with Corey, who was a very interesting and, you know, scrappy chick, which I really like and relate to, but I don't think I would have cared if it had been a guy. It was just, it was well written.
Okay. How about the setting? How much was Seattle and the Pacific Northwest Inside Passage? How did that contribute to your interest in the book?
Well, you know, again, let's see. Well, first of all, since I'm from here, it's really interesting to read a fictional book when I know pretty much every single reference point, you know, geographically speaking, neighborhoods. I know of what you're writing, and I've been to many of these places. I haven't been to Inside Passage, but I hate boating, and I hate camping. And so anything to do with, like, that kind of world, forget it. I'm not interested. But I know of the San Juans. We had a family cabin on Useless Bay, which is on the south end of Whidbey Island growing up. So obviously I know the water, I know the Puget Sound and all that. But I think it's hard for me to know what it would be like for someone to read that book without, I mean, not it's not that they wouldn't like it if they didn't know the references, It's just that I can't read it without knowing the references. You know what I mean? So I just kind of, I could put myself in it in a more, it takes away a bit of that imagining that one does when they read a book. If you don't usually don't know the place the writer is writing about, at least as well as I did in this book. So you kind of create this imaginary world where this was way more grounding me in a factual world that I know, because I live here. So just in terms of geographic, you know, I understood the place. And I don't know, you know, I mean, could this, you know, I think you and I have talked a little bit about this before. Could this happen in another area in the world? Sure, your story absolutely could. But there's a little bit of a labyrinthy quality about the Northwest, the darkness, the gloom, the trees, the rain, which good Lord knows it can be a bit oppressive. And then just all, like, the Inside Passage thing. I mean, everything's like a little, like, winding little things you can kind of get lost and tucked away and hidden away. So I suppose in a way that kind of does fit what you were trying to do, this kind of, you know, hiding and being found and being lost and being found kind of a feeling.
Right, and, you know, Puget Sound is a really it's not benign. I mean, if you fall in, you can get hypothermia very quickly. It's not like...
Yes, yes.
I mean, it's very ominous, and there's something about this very cosmopolitan city that is set on this body of water. It's not like L.A. and the Pacific Ocean.
No, you're right. It is ominous, and yet it has a veneer, the top level of this area seems pretty nice and polite and not particularly dangerous. You can get lost in the forest and get hypothermia. Certainly you can go overboard in a boat and it's really cold really fast and you're not going to live, which was interesting because when there is these water moments when Abe goes diving in to save Billy and can't swim and it's really cold, it's like, oh my God, this is dangerous.
And it happens like in an instant.
It happens in an instant. Obviously, he doesn't think twice about making this move. But like, yeah, that's dangerous. It's very dangerous. And they're all in the clothes. Clothes get wet and cold and heavy. You know, it can't move very well in water. I think the Northwest. It isn't benign. But you've lived here for a big chunk of your time and. It does kind of seem, you know, nice, just kind of flat and nice.
Well, spectacularly beautiful, and it's very welcoming in some ways, but you're always on the edge of the precipice. I mean, you know, if you make a misstep, it can get very dangerous very quickly.
Now, do you mean that just like mostly in the physical world, or do you mean that kind of almost socially?
No, I mean that mostly in the physical world. But I think that's kind of something that Corey lives with in her life in the book.
And she knows that from her young years. I mean, she seems so comfortable in that world of boats and, you know, knowing how to fix an engine or whatever the else she can do, or start a fire from, you know, wet matches. And
right.
She has that. She's almost like a Boy Scout in a way, you know.
And yet her life is one where, as hard as she tries, she is in constant danger because this maniac has targeted her.
Oh, God, yeah. And that guy, Nick, that's the kind of character that's scary because of the sociopath quality where you know you can't talk him out of it. You know what I mean? Like any kind of like a really horror film or something, like Silence of the Lambs. That's always, I saw that, flipped me out when I saw it years ago. and it's like the guy that was not the Hannibal Lecter character, the other one that was killing women and
the guy
them or whatever,
who was the serial murderer.
Yes. Well, I remember watching it and just thinking, if this guy got you, you can't talk sense to him. That is scary. You can't make him go, oh, yeah, this isn't a good idea. And that's the thing with Nick, is that this guy is a nut. He's insane. And yet, I mean, you gave him some complexity as to why he has some of these issue problems. But But nevertheless, he was operating on such a high level of functionality, clearly a politician, and yet just a complete psychotic. And what was it again? It was a needle or a knife or something he had?
It's like an ice pick. It's like
a pig. Oh, good. Nothing scarier than that. Oh, my God. Yeah, so here's this guy who's like basically saying to Corey through a variety of different ways, you're not going to escape. Sorry, babe. You know, you can't get away. And she, of course, that's what she believed to a degree.
And she was right, and she couldn't tell anybody.
Yeah, she was right. That's the other thing, that big secret thing. She can't tell anyone. Yeah, yeah.
So
that kind of isolated thing, yeah.
Let's talk about Nick in the context of the Pacific Northwest, because I think the Pacific Northwest is a place where a lot of people come to reinvent themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that it, because of that, which can be a very good thing, people they respect people's private space, and they don't ask a lot of questions about where they've been, what they've done, and I think part of what makes Nick believable is because he's in Seattle. I'm not sure he would be as believable in New York or L.A.
I've lived in L.A. for like 2 or 3 years, and so one other city I know a little bit, not well, but I grew up, born and raised here in Seattle, and I'm not your typical Seattleite. Since what I do is I work in the public eye and television, and I do a lot of interviewing with people. I mean, I am a very curious person, and I'm just go right for it. I don't mean I'm inappropriate. I suppose sometimes
but
I am.
But you're the exception, not the rule.
But maybe I'm the exception. And I think people here, what I hear about the area here, and I've always heard this for my whole life, is anyone who moves here, people are really pleasant, and they'll say like, "Yeah, let's get together," but they don't necessarily mean it. They don't not mean it. They don't necessarily mean it. Whereas someone in L.A. or New York, like, "Let's get together," and it's like, "Yeah, you're going to get together," and they might even just show up at your house. Mostly in New York, I think that might be more true. So here, there's that sense of, we've said this a couple times already, or I have. There's a politeness. And that might be the Scandinavian kind of background of a lot of the population that my grandmother was from Norway, my grandfather was from Iceland, my father's parents were from from Scotland and England. And there's a certain reserve and a certain kind of clannishness to that, and that might be kind of the why people can come here and recreate themselves or not have to reveal things. If things won't be revealed, and no one's going to dig into it and expose them necessarily, unless they do something pretty heinous or pretty overt.
Right. And Nick, of course, is very careful in this regard. Let's shift gears a little and talk about Abe. Did you find him? He's very much not of the Northwest.
Yeah, I liked him a lot. I liked his, in fact, my image of him, I think he's probably better looking than my image of him was, because he just seems like such a schlub, just kind of like messy and like buttons screwed up. And I would guess there'd be like almost holes in his pants where some...
Pocket from his pipe.
Yeah, hole in his pocket. Right, from his pipe. That's right, from the embers of his pipe. So he... he's certainly emotionally, he's super sensitive, super smart, obviously, but emotionally damaged to a degree, or has a sense of himself he's not kind of up to par, up to speed. And that one thing about that, I'd be curious from you, there was nothing, if I remember correctly, it's been 3 weeks since I read the book, I don't remember anything in particular happened. Like, there wasn't a horrible divorce. He didn't have a horrible divorce. It was just like his mother, it wasn't present for him, really. I mean, there's nothing that really was a defining bad thing that happened. Did I miss something there?
Well, there is a little section where he talks about his childhood, and he had a very anxious childhood.
Yeah.
And his mother really wasn't there and was not tuned into that at all.
Yes.
So he had
to
sort of deal with it by himself, and he developed this very elaborate inner life where he lives.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right, right, right. So which
Corey brings
is a very
him
common
out of that.
Thing. Yeah, yeah. Which in a way, I now as we reflect on that, I like that there wasn't like, oh, and then, you know, his dad was horribly murdered or whatever it might have been, that you kind of go, oh, okay, I guess we'll lay his internal, you know, his remove from the world to a degree on that. And instead it was on like, yeah, a difficult, sensitive kid, mother not tuned in, you know, he survived. He figured out a way to survive.
He figures it out by himself, but it's an inner process.
And there's a cost to that. So what did I liked him a lot. I liked his arc in terms of him slowly stepping out farther and farther on a limb for this person, and her pulling him out of his shell, but not by force, you know, but he just kind of kept taking these little steps and getting more and more involved outside of his own head.
Good. Well, I'm really glad that you liked the book, and I'm hoping you'll read the sequel, which is coming out in the winter. And
I'll start that at 2 a.m. I'll start it at 2 a.m. and read it straight through.
Let's turn to Art Zone. I'd really like to learn more about that. Can you tell us about the origins of the show and how it evolved?
Yeah. Well, you know, so I've been working in local television for my whole career. I'm 53, and so I started working in TV the mid-'80s in sketch comedy, which is that Almost Live, this TV sketch show, or the SN Theater, what's that called? Saturday Night Live equivalent here in Seattle.
I
did that for whatever, and you saw it, right? So I did that for, you know, 15 years or so until it went off the air. And it went off the air in 1999. Before it went off the air, I started doing little pieces on artists that aired on Channel 9, which is the PBS KCTS channel. And I did that just as I also was doing the sketch comedy show, just because I kind of wanted to do something a little different. So I did these little pieces. Then Almost Live went away. And then I developed this show called City of Go-Go, which was a five-minute, tiny, tiny show that had two tiny, tiny features in each show and a tiny, tiny calendar. So like a minute, I could have done a little feature on you, Bert's new book. And we would do a tiny little feature on you, a little bit about your book, you know, 90 seconds long, and then we'd promote the book in some way. So that was City of Go-Go. And that, I shot a pilot. For that, I got borrowed money from my dad, shot a pilot. Then it got picked up by the Seattle Channel and by PBS, KCTS here in Seattle. And that ran for a couple of years, and then it kind of morphed into or evolved into Art Zone. Seattle Channel decided they wanted to develop this more. And so Art Zone is now a half hour, essentially, 26 minutes, show that focuses on the local art scene. And we cover all genre of art, so visual arts, dance, film, literature, music, theater, food. And each show, you know, highlights a cornucopia of artists in a variety of ways. We always have a band on the show. They play in our studio. And the whole point of the show, for me, it started out, and it's really just grown in this way, is to highlight artists and art events and present it, hopefully in a compelling way, to the viewing audience, with the idea being, well, here's a lot of cool things going on, and most of the stuff we cover has some sort of thing that someone can go to. So if I did a piece on you, let's just say, as a writer, and you're going to be in town doing a reading, well, we tie it to that. We do the piece on you, and then we tie it to, oh, and Bert's going to be at Elliott Bay Books reading his book, you know, on blah, blah, blah date. So it's both serving the artists, doing stories on artists, and then also trying to pull in or offer the public opportunities to get out and see stuff for themselves, you know, experience things for themselves. Because as I've said for a while, like, experience the awesome power of art. And I think that's what art does, is it is a powerful force that gets you to look at the world in a new way and maybe your own life in a new way, you know?
So how do you make your programming decisions? That is to say, how do you choose? I mean, there's so many varied and important kind of things going on in the Northwest.
We just roll the dice every week. No, what we do is it's kind of a mix. You're always balancing things. First of all, Seattle is a very white person town. I mean, it's not pure white like some city in the Midwest or something, but or town in the Midwest. But it's a white town, and you know that from living here. So we're always looking at balancing a variety of things: gender, cultural background, and then type of art. So, and then obviously what's going on, what's kind of up in terms of what's happening in the next couple of weeks that we can do that's timely. So it's really like, okay, have we done anything on a dancer for a while? Oh, okay, no, we haven't. Well, what's going on dance-wise that looks interesting? And then we'll kind of drill into the dance scene and try to find something that we might want to promote or highlight, you know, do a profile on someone. But, you know, once you're doing, since I've been doing this for so long, 5 years now, and with my producer, Sheila Mullen, who's great, we're so tuned into the scene, and we get so much information sent to us. I see a ton of stuff. I go out and see a lot of art, you know, constantly. It's just like it's always on my radar. I'm just kind of surrounded. I'm in the swirl of it. So it's not like it's out there and I can't find it. I'm in it. I'm in the midst of it, like I'm in water, like warm water in a way. And then you just start making little choices. It's not always stuff that I necessarily think is, oh, that's the greatest thing in the world, but there's something good about it that may not be my thing, but there's something good about it that maybe it's going to be somebody else's thing. So, yeah, let's throw that into the mix. So it sounds like a pretty good life. It's a great life. I feel incredibly lucky that I get to do this, and I get to be myself. That's another interesting thing. When I did the sketch show, I was doing characters all the time, which was great. I loved it. But I finished that. You know what I mean? I had nothing else to say in sketch comedy. I did it. I wrote everything I needed to write in that kind of in that world, and I was done. And so this is I'm myself. And I can be myself. I don't have to put on a character. Of course, I turn the energy up because you just do when you're on camera. But I'm fundamentally me, and that's not hard to tap. I don't have to put on a costume or a wig or, you know, whatever, learn some horrible dialect that I can't do anyway. I'm not a particularly trained actor. So that's another part of it, too, is that I really like being myself on television and in the public eye. And then I also, I think the big picture thing for me is I really like people. I'm curious about people, and I like focusing on people and finding out who they are and highlighting something about them. It's fun, super fun.
So, I mean, this may be a hard question to answer, but I mean, what is there a way you can talk about what you've learned about Northwest artists in terms of common choices or preoccupations?
You know, I can't compare it to anyone. You know what I mean? I know the thing about Seattle is there's so many people who have moved here from somewhere else. So they live in the Northwest now, but they're not born and raised here. And that landscape changed 15 years ago when suddenly most people weren't from here anymore. Me being a Northwest born and raised, very uncommon anymore. Whereas, of course, in the past, everyone was born and raised here. No one moved here, or if they did, it was a rarity. So when I try to make any kind of comments about themes or things about people artistically, I guess I would say this. I think people, because we're tucked away up in the upper left corner, people take chances, try things. They have the opportunity to try things, which they might not be able to do in a bigger city because there wouldn't be the venues available. Again, I don't know what happens exactly in L.A. or in New York, but I know it's a lot bigger place. There are a lot bigger fish in those ponds. Here, you can. It kind of goes back to that thing about you can create yourself. You really kind of can. People can try things and do different things and stage shows in ways that maybe wouldn't happen necessarily in other biggish cities. So maybe that's something I could say. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, I think you make a very good point. I have lived in L.A. and New York and Seattle, each place for more than 7 years. And I would say you're absolutely right, and there's two aspects to it. One is that I think people are a lot more accepting in Seattle of experimentation in the mainstream.
Yes.
You know, if somebody tries something artistically, experimental, potentially, you know, unpopular, people in Seattle are perfectly willing to give it a chance.
So let me jump on that because, you know, maybe unpopular, but also bad. You know what I mean? There's bad stuff that gets put out there. And one thing that I've noticed is, for myself, I need to make damn sure that I see enough really good stuff. And often it can be homegrown, but it also might be something coming in from the outside. But I have to see that good stuff because otherwise the stuff where, because let's face it, art is hard. It is not easy to create art that has something to it, that has some sort of something that grabs you, even if you can't put your finger on it, you can't really understand it, or you can't describe it. Work that takes you somewhere is incredibly difficult to create. And so there's enough crap that gets put out there that it's really important to see good stuff so that you remember, oh, yeah, there's good stuff out there.
Not everything is like that dumb thing.
Yeah.
It's a terrific point, but it also means that the fact that it is possible to do bad stuff, and there have been a lot of bad stuff in theater and music and every area, also allows that person who maybe could never make it in the mainstream of L.A. or New York to do something really exceptional.
I completely agree. And I think so many artists would say failure is the most it's so damn painful, but it is the most fantastic teacher if you can embrace it and then have an opportunity to churn it into your process and learn from it and maybe then make something great out of that. I mean, most people who do good work have made a ton of bad work as well.
Absolutely.
You know, there's that great Ira Glass thing. He some podcasting he did where he talks about people wanting to do really great radio production. And he basically says, you know what, you have a great idea and you can't hit it at first and you just can't, but you can't hit your standard and that's normal and you just got to keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it. And that's the bottom line is it's not a magic show. You just keep doing it.
And that's how I write. I mean, I just rewrite and rewrite till I get where I need to go.
That's exactly, it's all, writing is rewriting. It's a constant rewriting. Yeah, yeah. You're peeling the onion.
Yep. Now, before, in the little time we have left, I want to ask you about the picture you sent me.
Because I wanted to let you know that as I was joking earlier saying you looked great today, we're not in the same room, and I have no doubt you do look great today, Bert. I think you're a very handsome man. However,
I can't really
see your face. It's all in my head. But I wanted you to know that I actually painted my toenails for you, and so I took a picture to send to you so that you could know that I care about you and I care about how I look for this interview. So that's why I sent you my painted toenails.
Your toenails,
how do they look?
They look great. I was going to tell you.
Do they? Because they're a little...
I'm glad they hear they're yours.
They are. I know. Don't feet... The picture of feet, there's almost a grotesqueness to it. Like, what are those things? They look freakish, kind of almost disembodied. Anyway, that's my Valentine to you.
Well, thank you, Nancy. Thank you so much. So I really enjoyed talking to you. I hope we can do this again after the next book.
Oh, it was delightful.
And I want to encourage all of you who are listening to watch Art Zone with Nancy Guppy and, of course, to read Inside Passage. And to learn more about Nancy and Art Zone, you can go to www.seattlechannel.org/Art Zone.
Isn't that intuitive?
Let's say it again. www.seattlechannel.org/Art Zone.
It makes you want to take a nap. God.
Well, but you'll be very satisfied when you get there.
That's true. Yeah.
And you can go to www.bertweisbord.com and learn more about my books. And I'm going to be in Seattle on June the 28th at the Seattle Mystery Bookstore. So I
you
hope
are.
To see.
Oh, fantastic.
I am.
Great.
Nancy, thank you very much. And I look forward to talking to you again.
Absolutely. Thanks, Bert.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thanks for the picture, too. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye.